during this debate. We're having a wonderful time with the Irish National Debate Team that's agreed to debate my students from Northwest University here in Kirkland. Everyone loves to win a prize, and awards and trophies are all the more meaningful when the contest is a difficult one. Our guests from Ireland have made a fantastic achievement of winning their national debate championships, and the prize that they received was a two-week tour of the United States. This is the second week that they've been involved in debating college students across the country, and we're fortunate to have them here today to demonstrate their brilliance, and you will not believe their eloquence and great persuasiveness. We asked them to debate the topic, America would be better off with an Irish president, so we'll see how they twist and spin this topic. I want to introduce the debaters, and first we'll start with my students from Northwest University. Our team captain is Nigel Reed. Nigel is a religion and philosophy major from Kirkland. One of his partners here is Morgan Chin. Morgan is an environmental science major. He's a freshman and new to our team. And then we have Shelley Hall from New York City. She's a psychology major. Representing the Irish National Debate Team, the lead speaker will be Stephen Boyle. Stephen is from Trinity College, and he lives in Dublin. His partner is Jonathan Gallagher, also from Trinity College in Dublin. And then finally, ending the debate for the Irish will be Chris Cassan. He's from County Kerry, and he's also a dual U.S.-Irish citizen. Officiating the debate will be our Speaker of the House, Shauna Marshall. She'll be calling the speakers up, making sure they're following the rules correctly. And then we have our timer, Tiffany Dykman. So let's go ahead and start the debate. I'll turn it over to the Speaker of the House. We are actually in an imaginary House of Parliament. We're doing a simulation here. It's a speaking game. The debaters don't necessarily believe what they're talking about, but they've been assigned to debate this as an academic exercise to develop their skills so that someday they might join the civic discourse like goes on here at the Kirkland City Hall all the time. After the first minute, we get a chance for the other team to stand up and take a question. They will beg a question, so they'll put their hand out, and the other person speaking has the right to accept it or to reject it. They can say, sit down, it's perfectly all right for them not to accept a question. So now we can watch the debate, and let me turn it over to the Speaker of the House, Shauna, whenever you're ready.
All right, I call this House to order. And the topic we'll be discussing is resolved. America would be better off with an Irish president. I welcome the Prime Minister of the government, Stephen, to give a speech lasting no longer than 7 minutes.
Thank you very much for the lovely intro. No pressure on us as the Irish National Debate Team to do well here in this wonderful auditorium. We've come over from the land where the only people ever, we think, in the world to ever manage to make cakes out of potatoes, we're that obsessed with them. So you might excuse us if we're a little bit weird during the debate, but that's just our natural inclination. We're here today to talk about that America would be better off with an Irish president. Very few people know this, but Barack Obama has actually dropped the apostrophe from his name. He was originally Barack Obama. He does actually have ancestors from County Offaly, a great-great-great-grandmother, which makes him the closest thing to an Irish candidate that there is in this election. Now, even though you might say that's a bit of a tenuous link, we think the fact that 25 million Americans claim to be Irish from a country with only 4 million people in it means that it's about time we claim one of you as our own instead of the other way around. But why do we want to claim Barack Obama? Is he not just some orator, some guy who can speak, but he's not got much substance to him? That seems to be what a lot of people think. They think that he's very little on substance, he's big on the speeches. Well, firstly, He has an awful lot of substance. He has an awful lot to offer this country, and that's something that I'm going to talk about in great detail later. But the first thing to say straight off is that oratory is not a bad thing. In fact, if you look at the fact that Republicans have been able to frame in this country the debate through things like calling things death taxes, the Patriot and Protect America Acts, language can be a very persuasive tool within politics. And as a Democratic candidate, Barack Obama has shown himself as being capable of reclaiming words like hope, like change for the Democratic Party, being able to reach out and persuade people. And oratory is not something that should be rejected out of hand in a debate. If you look at the fact that he's the one bringing in many young people, many urban voters, people who haven't registered to vote in the past, with his ability to inspire them, with his ability to show them that politics can change and can make a difference to them, then you can see the fact that oratory isn't simply a mere tool. It's a way of reaching out and appealing to people and bringing them into the political process. George W. Bush was elected with 17% of the population. That's how few people voted the first time around that he was elected. So I think there's a serious problem in this country in terms of representation in politics. And in order for politics to work, you have to appeal to an entire population. And that's something that Barack Obama can do. And it's particularly important when you look at weighing up whether you should elect him or Hillary in the upcoming primaries, the remaining primaries, and for the superdelegates. Because what they have to look at is who's going to be more likely to win in the long run. But I think the fact that he has the best policies also comes in very clearly into that. If you look at what he wants to do in terms of universal health care, and I'll take you in a minute on this, not only is he appealing to the broader population, but he's proposing solutions that are the right thing for the American people and the right thing for the American public. But before I move on to talk about that, I'll take you on this point.
Yeah, I mean, you do attempt to claim Obama as your own. I think maybe you left out his middle name of Hussein. I think the Iraqis were trying to claim him earlier. But my question is at what point does this oratory ability, does it become just a little fluff, just a little, like cotton candy, not a lot of substance, but it sure sounds good and tastes good to eat at a fair, but eventually it just gives you a stomachache.
Right. If it was just fluff, then why was he able to get up after there was national condemnation about him, about his pastor, about his relationship with his church, and give one of the most inspiring and honest speeches that this country has seen about race. In a climate where people are afraid to talk about things and where dialogue can make a genuine difference, he was the one who stood up and said, yes, I stood by this man because he was my friend, because he brought me to religion, but I can still disagree with him. He stood up and he said, this country is a problem with race, this country is a problem on both sides, where black people feel that they have been alienated by white people, but where at the very same time, white people feel that they have been rejected through things like affirmative action. He was the one who was willing to stand up and say, these are the problems our country is facing. I don't have all the solutions, but I'm going to acknowledge the problem. Sometimes speaking can be very important in terms of creating a national dialogue and in terms of changing people's perception, and that's the dialogue that he started. So speeches have a very big role to play. But it's not just speeches. That's what I'm trying to get away from. And it's not just things like Hussein, trying to label him as the Muslim candidate, as a lot of people have done, in spite of him quite clearly being the Christian. It's things like healthcare, to get back to what I was originally trying to say. Obama wants to introduce healthcare for the American people. Now, coming from Ireland, we take that as kind of a fundamental right, as a right entitlement of citizenship. But it's also the cheaper and more affordable thing to do. The problem is that people are beholden to pharmaceutical and medical companies, particularly on the Republican side, and the lobbyists that Obama refuses to take money from. If you look at what they've done in Massachusetts, where they introduced universal healthcare through leaders like Peter Katusha in the Senate there, in the Democratic Senate, what they did is they realized that it was actually cheaper in the long run to give people universal health care. Because what you do is you prevent people from becoming so sick that they have to go to the emergency room in order to get their free treatment. You prevent people from becoming so sick that they're dying in their homes instead of going to their GP or their hospital because they can't afford to get surgery and because they can't afford to look after themselves. That's what he wants to find a solution to. If you look at social welfare, he wants to expand people's entitlements. Again, people are like, well, people aren't going to go out to work. But if you look at the European experience, in Ireland we have one of the most generous social welfare programs in the world, but we also have the highest level of full employment anywhere in the world. We only have about 4.5% people unemployed. So it shows that the kind of programs that he's proposing have worked in other places, but he's proposing the sensible solutions, no thank you, that have become part of other countries, but because of the lobbyists and the political culture here, people don't want to go along with. And he's also got the most sensible fiscal policies. Because if you look at what George Bush has done in terms of tax cuts, he's cut taxes for the richest people in America. He's cut the taxes on the people that can most afford to pay them. Why is that a problem? Well, it's been shown to be utterly inefficient at stimulating the economy. His argument was that these people are going to invest more, are going to invest more in the economy. They're going to take more risks when you cut their tax rates. They've been trying this since the time of Reagan, but it hasn't worked, and it's continuously shown itself not to work. What Obama wants to do is raise taxes for those groups and lower them for the middle classes, which are the people that have been shown to be the driving force behind economies around the world, because he's not beholden to the special interest groups, because he's not beholden to the groups that want to push him into favouring the companies, favouring the pharmaceutical companies, and favouring the corporations over the people on the street. That's why, in spite of the fact that he won't take money from the lobbyists, he won't take money from those special interest groups, he is outraising Hillary Clinton about 5-3 in terms of the money he raises each month from genuine people on the street, people who want the change that he's giving them. It's not just rhetoric, it is change that people can genuinely believe in. And finishing with that particularly nice soundbite, I'd like to hand it over to the opposition. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Stephen, for your remarks on the true Irish candidate, Barack Obama. I now welcome the leader opposition, Shelley, to give a speech no longer than 7 minutes. So here on the opposition side, instead of siding with the government, talking about why Obama should be the next president, we are going to talk about why we believe Hillary Clinton would be the next best president of the United States. And we'll give you some reasons. Our main reason today is that Hillary has experience, and Obama, he kind of talks about this whole judgment thing, and we're going to talk about, I'm going to explain why it is that his judgment theory doesn't really stand true in the face of all the plans and all the things that he's proposed. So let's get into our first thing. First of all, by the different plans that she's come up with, Hillary Clinton has made it clear that she understands the economic system. Okay, most people who aren't economics majors, I'm not an economics major myself, but most people who aren't into economics don't really know the equation for GDP, and that's what we're talking about when we're talking about economics. We're talking about raising the GDP. Well, the GDP, the way that you increase the GDP is government spending plus consumer spending plus investments, and then exports minus imports, and you know, when those numbers go up, the GDP goes up. Well, Obama's approach is to make tax cuts for the rich and do all these things. And I mean, his plan sounds great as far as his approach to the economy. But what we see when we look at the actual GDP equation is that it does nothing for the economy at all. What Hillary does is she provides, she has a $70 billion plan to jumpstart the economy. And this is exactly what we need, because the first part of that equation was government spending. And so she's being smart with what she's doing. And that experience, not at this time, that experience that she has in understanding the economy and understanding how things work is really what makes her the best candidate for the presidency. So like I said, she has not at this time. She has a $70 billion plan to jumpstart the economy. She has a $30 billion plan for states. This is under the $70 billion plan. She has $30 billion for states to help with foreclosures. Now, this the housing crisis, we all know about this housing bubble, this terrible thing. Well, where Barack Obama hasn't really had any concrete plans for what we're going to do about this housing crisis, she's come up with incredible plans. For example, like this $30 billion for the states where people will be able to avoid going into bankruptcy. Now, when we think about bankruptcy, who does bankruptcy help? How does bankruptcy help our economy? It doesn't. So what she's doing, she's providing something to be able to bring money back into our economy and provide stability into the economy. When I'm done with this point, I'll take your question. She has a $5 billion plan for energy conservation plans, grants, and this will create new jobs. And if people have money, then people have more money to spend, and that will bring more money into the economy. That's exactly what we want here. She has she wants to give $40 billion in tax rebates to working and middle class. So just like the government team was saying that we want to encourage
you know, the working class and lift up the working class. Hillary Clinton does that already, and she actually has a plan more so than Obama. So we really believe, because they stand for a lot of the same things. I mean, let's be honest here. But Hillary has a plan for what she stands for, and that's why we believe that she really should be the next presidential candidate. With that, I'll take your question.
Presumably, if this money, $120 million, is going to go aside to the 81 earmarks that she had in the federal budget last year for special interest groups and lobbyists.
Well, you know, that's a really interesting thing, because what they're focusing on here is they're talking about giving money back to the poor. Now, there's all this talk about recession, and what happens when people are afraid that the economy is going to crash? They hold on to their money. Now, let's say you have two people. You have this lady who has a ton of money, and, you know, she's hearing about recession, but even though the recession, things like that might be affecting her stocks and things like, and affecting her stocks, she still has the ability to be able to function and things like that. Now, let's say you have another lady who's just very poor, and she's hearing talks about recession. What this does for people who don't understand economy, and those are the people who are, you know, have lower income, they don't understand, I need to spend more in order to actually earn money. So by putting money, by making sure, not just taking money away from the rich, but making sure that they have, you know, some money and spreading out the money more broadly, you actually ensure that money will be spent and be put back into the economy. So I'm going to move into my second point, because, man, I'm running out of time here. She also understands foreign policy. Now, they're talking about how would they approach resolving the nuclear situation going on in Iran right now. And Obama's take to this is that he wants to go and he wants to talk with the president of Iran, like, immediately and stuff. And that's nice. And I mean, I'm so glad that he's very confident in his speaking skills. But let's be honest here. The president of Iran is very anti-American. He makes several anti-American statements. He's denied the Holocaust. He does not like us. No. So not this time. He does not like us. So why on earth would we feel like that we have the audacity to march into his office and decide that we're going to have a meeting with him? Hillary Clinton, understanding more of the foreign policy, what she wants to do is she wants to test the waters by sending high-level presidential envoys and to kind of reason and find some way to kind of settle the ground a little more so that things can be more productive when she actually goes to meet with, not at this time, when she actually goes to meet with the president of Iran. And we believe that is smart foreign policy, and let's make a president. Okay, so for my final point, which is that now is the time for a female president. 90% of elected officials are male right now, but women make up 52% of the population. We feel like that's imbalanced, and we'd like to fix that. Now, the African Americans received voting rights way before a woman did. And so what we believe that voting Hillary as president will do, this will kind of equal the playing field, where we've given African Americans an opportunity to, you know, jump up a few bars. Now we're saying, okay, now women, it's your turn. And in that way, we're providing more social mobility for more people, and we believe that this is a positive thing. Mary Robinson, who was actually the first president of Ireland, fought to legalize civil divorce, fought to legalize the use of contraceptions, and the same civil liberties that she fought for in Ireland are the same civil liberties that Hillary Clinton is fighting for right now. And so we really believe that now is the time for a female president. So, because Hillary Clinton understands the economic system, and because she understands foreign policy, and because now is the perfect time for a female president, we on the opposition side beg to oppose.
Thank you, Shelley, for that insight on Hillary Clinton. I now call on the member of the government, John, to give a speech no longer than 7 minutes.
Ladies and gentlemen of this august house, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great pleasure to be here in this hallowed hall of democracy, bursting as it is with eager fellows and ladies, just hanging on to our absolutely to our every word. So it's wonderful to speak to you all today. What I'd like to do today is, first of all, I'm going to have a bit of a chat about what was brought to us by the last speaker, and to talk about Hillary as a candidate under those points. And then I'm going to talk about Obama. And there's going to be an overarching theme to my speech, like there are to many of his, which is that he is brilliant and he should be president. Now, Gary Gillespie told you before the debate, this isn't necessarily people's opinion, you know what I mean? I'd like to tell you that not only are myself, Stephen, and Chris fanatic Obama supporters, like to the point of ridiculous amounts of love for this man. So is all of Ireland. So in terms of coalitions of the willing in the future, should you decide to invade anywhere else, if Obama is the president, we will probably all tag along and we'll be totally fine with that. So anything you want, any potatoes you're running out of, we're happy with that. So, first of all, we heard first of all that Hillary is experienced and that she understands the economy. First of all, it should be pointed out that any differences between Hillary's economic policy and that of Barack Obama are practically cosmetic. They both have extremely good advisors. We don't think Hillary Clinton understands much more than Obama in any way whatsoever. And we think that Hillary, in the position that she's in, where she basically needs to bribe 1 million superdelegates in order to have any chance of becoming the nominee at the Democratic Convention, for her, no thank you, to keep up with this erosion of the Democratic position, all she is doing is dividing the Democratic Party, dividing the American people, and removing the chance for the next president, i.e. Barack Obama, to gather the kind of grassroots support and the kind of momentum that he is going to need when he beats John McCain this November. All she's doing is causing division. All she's doing is hanging on for dear life. She's not the kind of person who's buying votes for the Democratic Party, and she's certainly not the kind of person who's buying any kind of faith in the political process. For the kind of people who've grown up knowing Bush, Clinton, Bush, they do not want to know another Clinton. She said a while ago, she said, well, it took a Clinton to get the last Bush to fix up after the last Bush. Maybe we need another one. I would like to point out, that doesn't mean anything. That's just words. It doesn't make any sense. In terms of her experience extends to having, one, married a president, and two, hosted quite a lot of receptions in the White House. Shit. That's about it. She had a really, really bad healthcare program, which we could talk about, but now she's getting up and she's telling us she fixed Northern Ireland, which to us is a little bit offensive, to say the very least. No thanks, I'm going to get onto my own stuff in a sec. But there you go. Foreign policy. First of all, this is a woman who misspoke when she said snipers were shooting at her. What she meant to say was that a child was waiting to read her a poem. Okay, but she's only misspoken once in 12 years. She's lied about her role in Northern Ireland. No thank you. And we're told that it's bad that Obama wants dialogue. We say, first of all, dialogue is better than the axis of evil rhetoric and the scapegoating of Middle Eastern nations that have characterized American foreign policy at least for the last 8 years. We say that the current American approach allows us to be painted as belligerent, allows us to be painted as not wanting to engage in any kind of dialogue whatsoever. And she's going to send people over to prepare the ground. First of all, Obama's probably going to sort things out before he goes over, make sure it's going to be okay. Second of all that shows us is that she is too afraid to put herself and her own reputation on the line because she's afraid of being rejected by Mahmoud I'm a dinner jacket, as he is very frequently referred to. So, we don't buy any of that stuff on foreign policy. And finally, it's time for a female president. Now, I could basically pick the name of any group in the US and claim that it was kind of time for a blank president, right? We don't believe it's going to increase social mobility, no thank you. We also don't accept that women are anywhere near the most maligned group in American society. We say Obama isn't just looking at women, although he is. We say he's looking at inner city communities ravaged by crime and drugs and guns. We say he's not ignoring welfare moms who are essentially ignored by the state. We say he's looking at ghettoization. He's looking at the huge problems, the ethnic, cultural, and religious divides within American society today. And to say we need a women president, once again, that's just words. It doesn't mean anything. What's different about Hillary, please?
What's different about Hillary is, like you said, it's not just words. He's looking at all the situations, but Hillary Clinton is proposing a plan in order to...
Well, no, she's proposing a plan. First of all, it's pretty much, there's not a huge amount, because they're working off the same strategists, there's not a huge amount of difference, they're working off the same ideological platform. Second of all, she says she's going to be proposing a plan, she's never going to get the chance to enact it, and some of her plans are stupid, so I don't really want them. Now, the speech. America, as it stands, and Irish people are obsessed with American politics and we love to watch it, America has been torn apart, in the past decade especially, but throughout, America has been torn apart by this spirit of partisanship, by this one-upmanship that characterizes all of its national politics, by the fact that as soon as you get the White House, you use the fact that you have that White House to rub it in the face of the other parties and to say, look at us, we get to nominate people to the Supreme Court and own your life. There's been no effort within the Bush presidency, for example, to gain any kind of bipartisan support, to cross the aisle in any way. We think that's a huge problem. We think with someone like Barack Obama, who not only has made overtures to large amounts of groups on both sides of the divide, we also say that he has one great inherent advantage, which is that Barack Obama by himself cannot be president. Barack Obama is a Democrat. Barack Obama is a liberal. Barack Obama has used drugs. Barack Obama is black. Barack Obama has lived in Malaysia, where he attended a madrasa. Barack Obama's middle name is Hussein. All of these things are by themselves enough to disqualify someone from getting the kind of support necessary to gain the American presidency. But Stephen talked to you about bringing new supporters out, because what Barack Obama does is Barack Obama says, these may all be true, but I'm going to come over these and I'm going to persuade a nation that I can represent them. I'm going to persuade a nation that I can be their figurehead. And I'm going to persuade a nation that I can be America. And that is what is so important, is that he is entering into a dialogue with the American people. He's not like Hillary Clinton, who walked into Super Tuesday thinking, well, I am the candidate that everyone's going to vote for, who is the inevitable candidate. We think it's wonderful to see that the American people have rejected that and have said, we are going to vote for the person that persuades us best. And I think when you look at Barack Obama's idea of the Constitution, he doesn't see it in a traditional way. He doesn't see it as a Republican or a Democrat set of rules to be interpreted when they're in power in the way that best suits them and their followers. If you read The Audacity of Hope, it's a wonderful book. Barack Obama's idea of the Constitution, he says it forms the basis, creates the freedoms under which you can have a conversation, under which you can discuss what America believes in. It forms the framework for a great American conversation, and it is so wonderful to watch a candidate who gets up and who says, I am going to restart this conversation. No longer is it just one-upmanship. No longer is it partisanship. It's people talking to each other. He might be a Democrat, but he can accept why you in the Midwest, you know, this crazy farmer in the Midwest might want to keep his guns. He understands the significance of that. He understands Christians and their deeply held views on life. He doesn't reject them. He doesn't snub them in the same way that Hillary Clinton tends to. We say he could have sidestepped, like Stephen said, he could have sidestepped the Jeremiah Wright issue. But rather than focus it down and say, oh, that's just my pastor, it doesn't matter, he opened it up and he made it a great American debate. And that is the kind of thing that we should be voting for. In terms of experience, as I said, Hillary's, we don't buy it. What's Barack Obama's experience? It's the true American experience. He has immigrant background. He's lived abroad, in a country where 25% of people, roughly, actually hold passports. He's someone who has experience of foreign nations, and we're dealing with those. That's hugely important. Finally, really simple reason. Obama can beat McCain. Hillary can't. There is no one Republicans hate more than someone with the surname Clinton. They might not like McCain at the minute, because McCain is alienating the right of that party. But it'll be like in France with Chirac. I don't know if that's familiar to anyone. But the fact is, if it looks like Clinton might be elected, people will rally behind McCain, even if they don't like him. And that's not the case with Obama, because he can get that kind of widespread supporters. He's a Democrat who's not afraid to talk about values. He's a Democrat who's not afraid to talk about faith. And he's a Democrat who's not afraid to talk about America as an idea, and not just as a set of economic policies. Vote for Barack Obama, and let the debate begin. Thank you.
Thank you, John, for offering us that speech. I now welcome a member of the opposition, Morgan, to give a speech no longer than 7 minutes.
Alexander Fleming once said that chance favors the prepared mind. And we on the opposition side believe that now is the chance for us to change America for the better. And we have to do it by being prepared. And that's why we on the opposition side uphold Hillary Clinton in the 2008 election, because she has way more experience than Barack Obama. The government side keeps dismissing this experience, but we think it is huge that Hillary has had 35 years in political background, has been in the Senate for 7 years, and has 8 years of White House experience. We think this is huge, and we stand on experience in a presidential candidate in November. So I'm going to show you this through three major points of why we should vote for Hillary Clinton. That the old Clinton administration was a rainbow, that it was a good administration, and that this opens up my second point, that Hillary is now the next step to achieve the pot of gold at the end of that rainbow. And lastly, that she provides things such as health care and education for all. So my first point, we're going to take a look at the old Clinton administration, see how it was economically successful, and how Hillary was there all along. So, there was an 8-month recession before the Clinton administration, and unemployment peaked at 7.7%. Consumer confidence index decreased for 8 months straight. So consumers were not confident in the economy. Unemployment was up, economy was down. What did Clinton do? The first thing he did was he supported a $500 billion deficit reduction package. So he cut spending and increased taxes on the rich. This turned the economy around. and the economy actually increased, and the federal budget logged its first annual increase in 39 years, and it went on to log three consecutive more years of increase. Alan Greenspan has called this package an unquestioned factor in the economic boost of the time. And Hillary was there all along, gaining experience with Clinton, with her husband along in the White House. 8 years of White House experience is huge.
Sir.
So the old Clinton administration is a rainbow that leads us into electing Hillary Clinton this November to get the pot of gold at this end, at the end of this rainbow. So Hillary Clinton has more experience, so she will provide us more specific plans than Barack Obama. This is the big difference between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, as the government side keeps asking for. What is the big difference between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton? Well, it's experience, and even though they keep dismissing this experience allows her to formulate specific plans to help change this nation. Barack Obama does not have these specific plans, and it is these specific plans on education and health care that I will now be getting into. So Hillary Clinton wants to provide health care for everybody. Barack Obama, similarly, does have a form of socialized health care, but Hillary's is actually a very specific plan. Her plan is American Health Choices. So it's American Health Choices plan. 47 million Americans right now are uninsured, and hundreds of millions are at risk of being uninsured just by a pink slip. If they lose their job, they lose their coverage. So Hillary is coming up with this plan to give people the same health care options as even congressmen. These people are given tax breaks and are given the option to either choose the health care system they have now, or they're given a menu of options that through Congress, and they can either select these private industries, or they can even go to public sectors such as Medicaid. So this is a very specific plan, and it's going to lower premiums and increase security of Medicare because every individual is going to have it. It's not going to be like the movie John Q, where you are going to be denied a heart transplant if you don't have insurance. Every American is going to be guaranteed insurance. Every American can get their heart if they need it. So with that, I'll take your point.
Would you not agree that the reason that Hillary Clinton was so afraid to release her schedules from the White House as First Lady was that they showed that her argument about experience was an absolute fallacy, because for all the big decisions, she was abroad on foreign visits and hosting people in the White House, while Bill Clinton was in the Oval Office making the actual decisions that she was in no way party to.
Hillary Clinton, by being married to the president, has experience. If that was abroad, that is still experience with foreign relations and with other things. And she didn't spend all of her time outside of the White House in other nations. I don't think that we can believe that Hillary Clinton was never in the White House. I think that she was in the White House probably the majority of the time acting with Bill Clinton, and she stood by him both terms. So this experience is huge. And so back to my point on health care. She's going to limit premium payments based on your percentage of income. So the bigger, you get more of a cut with the lower income that you have, so you get more of a chance to get health care. So this is big. This is like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, is insurance for everybody. These 47 million people who are uninsured will now be insured, and these hundreds of millions who are questionable will now be insured, and you can get health care at any time. So not only does she provide health care for all, she provides education for all. Right now, college graduates earn double that of high school graduates during their lifetime. This is $1 million more dollars in profit that they make than high school graduates. We think college education is a good thing because it provides skill and education to our workers to be able to compete in a global economy. And only 7% of people in low-income families are getting a Bachelor of Arts degree. And the government side is pointing out that Obama is working with lower income and lower class. Well, that's good to say, but here's Hillary Clinton actually taking a specific plan, using her experience to take out a specific plan for low income families. So she plans to pass a $3,500 tuition tax credit or extend the HOPE grants.
Sure.
So this would cover more than half the cost of public schools. She also plans on increasing the Pell Grant, which, when it was enacted, covered 99% of two-year colleges, 77% of cost of four-year college, and 36% of public school college. And this has been halved. And Hillary Clinton is wanting to increase the maximum on the Pell Grant so that people can be able to afford college and be able to get the skill and education they need to survive in the market today. Also, she wants to provide $500 million to community college to increase their programs. She also wants to get rid of the time-consuming FAFSA that all college students like myself hate, because she's estimated that 100 million hours are wasted by college students trying to get aid with this FAFSA, and in the end, all you get is a, sorry, we can't give you money anyway. So what she's going to do, her specific plan, is to check a box on your income tax return, and you will be mailed a letter to how much money you get. How much easier is that than filling out 100 million hours, 100 million hours spent, filling this form out? So much easier to just check the box, see how much money you get. So this would simplify education and would also encourage people to get a college education, because this FAFSA is a hindrance to people who don't want to fill out the form and who don't think they're going to get aid anyway. So for the reasons that the Clinton administration with Bill Clinton was the rainbow, was a good model of what a presidency should be. Now Hillary Clinton had experience during that administration and now has that experience, so she can set forth specific plans for health care and for education and provide us with that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. We should vote for Hillary Rodham Clinton in November of 2008.
Thank you, Morgan, for your remarks. And I'd like to close out the debate, or close out the government side of the debate, with the government whip, Chris, giving a speech no longer than 7 minutes.
Good afternoon. It's absolutely wonderful to be here in Kirkland. Everybody's taking very good care of us. The people at the Heathman Hotel especially have been very kind to us, and it's great to be here in such a wonderful auditorium. The Washington administration was quite a good administration. I don't think that makes Martha Washington qualified to be president. She was there during a lot of important things that happened in American history. She may have seen George Washington do some important things. He may have talked to her about some important things. That does not mean that she has the experience to be president. There's a difference between experience in terms of actually having done something and having seen it be done, or actually have been involved in something and merely being present at a time at which it was taking place. All that Hillary Clinton had was experience of being there. They've given you health care as their example of one of Hillary's best policies. Hillary was given a free rein by Bill Clinton in 1993 to have a go at fixing the great health care problem. How far did Hillary get? Nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. It was a fiasco, it got nowhere, it got no support, and it achieved absolutely nothing. The Clinton administration was, in some ways, quite a good administration. However, you can't have Bill Clinton again. The Constitution disbars it. If you want him, the best thing to do is to elect somebody with similar qualities, similar experience, similar policies, rather than just noticing that a senator from New York, a state in which she doesn't even live, or didn't live before she left the White House, had the same name, and therefore deciding, oh, well, surely she's going to be very similar to that. She doesn't have any more experience than Barack Obama either. So she's been in the Senate for a term and a small bit. You know, first of all, that doesn't mean that she has some sort of long period of experience in public office or any long experience in any executive position in the way that Bill Clinton did. You know, lots of presidents didn't have that either, and they turned out to be extremely good. Nobody asked, you know, nobody questions now whether John Kennedy was too inexperienced to handle the Cuban Missile Crisis. I think that we all know the answer to that question. And sitting in the Senate for 7 years, because you got elected in a state you were parachuted into, where Republicans can't win any elections, and you had the name recognition of being married to the most famous person on the planet, doesn't mean that you're experienced in any way. No, thank you. Similarly, they said she spent time abroad as evidence of her experience in foreign policy. When we say, if you go on holiday to Tijuana, that doesn't mean that you're qualified to deal with the drugs problem. It's been shown time after time that every claim Hillary has made about being involved in any foreign policy, whether it be Bosnia, whether it be Northern Ireland, whether it be Rwanda, whether it be Kosovo, it was shown that she went on goodwill missions, which are all well and good when you are married to the President of the United States, whether you be a woman or a man, as I'm sure she, if she did get elected, would send bail on, or as hopefully Barack we'll send Michelle Obama on. But that doesn't mean you're experienced in foreign policy making in any more way than the fact that Barack Obama went to elementary school in Indonesia makes him an expert on anything else, as he would never claim. But if she had, she probably would. What I'm going to talk about mainly now is why we think that effectively what has gone on in this debate is the same thing that's gone on in the campaign. There is a momentous, a historic moment at hand in the history of the United States and in American political history, where you have the possibility that things that people never thought would happen could happen, where you see people who people never thought would vote going out to vote, where you saw people who you never thought would be involved in the political process going and joining on campaigns, and where you see a man with a name and a face that everybody would have told you would never get him to the White House just almost within his grasp. And yet what you've had from the Clinton campaign and from the opposition in this debate is a recitation of numbers. Numbers that are exactly the same as the numbers that will be proposed by the Obama campaign. It's just he doesn't think that the way you get elected is by listing off the specifics of your plan in dollar numbers. Because his education policy is the same as her education policy. They talked for a minute and a half about how Hillary's in favor of more people going to college. So is Obama. So is almost every other candidate. And because they're liberal Democrats with basically the same ideology, they have exactly the same policies. If you'd watched any of the 28 debates that they've had against each other, you'd have noticed that the most common phrase was, "I have to agree with the senator on this particular policy." The point is, Obama knows that politics is about a lot more than that, and the reason why fewer than half of the American people vote, why about a third of African Americans vote, why little more than that of Hispanic people vote, and why almost nobody in a poor inner city neighborhood votes, is because people have turned politics into a spout numbers, bore them to death game, as opposed to what it should be about, which is inspiration.
Sure.
Yeah, you said that, and we agree, that Barack Obama and Hillary have similar policies, but Hillary, we believe, isn't she more qualified to carry out these plans?
Because first of all, there's no qualification to be...
7 years in Senate, whereas
okay.
Obama couldn't even get a floor passed to the Senate in 2000?
Barack Obama is one of the youngest senators ever elected, one of the youngest, presidential candidates ever, so, we think that maybe people caught on that it was a good thing, and that maybe just because he's successful while young doesn't mean we should sit back and wait to see what he does over the next 10 years. Maybe he could marry, George Bush on a gay marriage, spend some time in the White House, and that would make him qualified to be president. It's a ridiculous argument. Being in the White House doesn't make you experienced. You can't point to one single thing that she's ever achieved which makes her any more qualified, which is purely an ethereal term anyway, than he is. Moreover, the campaign shows you something about his experience and his qualification for being president. Because being president of the United States has become something that doesn't matter to an awful lot of people in the United States. Lots of people are disenfranchised. Lots of people don't feel involved in the political process. Lots of people feel the political process has no relevance to them. To them, the American dream is dead. And then came Barack Obama, a politician who people finally realized, somebody who's not just about sound bites, somebody who's not just about pandering to what the latest poll told them that soccer moms and people in Midwestern, middle-class, SUV-owning neighborhoods think. Somebody who thinks that you have a vote if you live in an inner city and are a single mother in the same way that you have a vote if you live in Missouri in a suburb. Somebody who understands that Americans are equal and that you need to talk to all of them as if they are people. If you think that Hillary Clinton would have given the speech that Barack Obama gave about race as a response to the Jeremiah Wright controversy, rather than trying to have Jeremiah Wright sent to Columbia, then you're living in a fantasy land, because she would have run and hid rather than faced up to the facts. And if you want to talk about reality, if you want to talk about hard politics, if you want to say Obama is just talk, he's all talk and no substance, well, first of all, we say talk is pretty important when it comes to the number of people who've been inspired by him to get involved in the political process, and she doesn't care about those people because normally they don't vote. And furthermore, in terms of reality, if you talk electoral math, there are about 10 states in this country which you can put right in the Republican column if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, because of the fact that her name is Clinton and they think that she is the most evil woman on the planet. But those states would be in play. States like South Carolina, states like North Carolina, like Georgia, like Louisiana, like Missouri. Places that the Democrats can't win if they have a divisive candidate in which people don't believe. But places like all of the other states, like all 50 states in this nation, which feel that Barack Obama is somebody to be respected, somebody to be admired, and somebody who can inspire America to greater things in the 21st century, rather than going back to the same old, tired politics of, oh, well, she has the same name, therefore she might be just as good. We think it's pandering to women to say that you need a woman president, just as it would be if we said, oh, affirmative action says we should have a black president. We should have the best president, and the best president for the 21st century is Barack Obama.
Thank you, Chris, for those remarks. Now I want to conclude this debate with the opposition whip. I welcome Nigel to give a speech lasting no longer than 7 minutes.
So we have to answer the question here today, why would we vote for one candidate over another candidate? I mean, why would you choose? Now, I'm a debater. That's kind of my job, to be able to explain things to people, because a lot of these policies can be complex. They can be confusing, and sometimes I have to reread some CNN articles or reread stuff on foreign affairs, and just to get an understanding of it, because if I can't explain it to a judge, I lose, period. Like, if I'm just talking just out there and no one gets it, then they lose. So I decided, what would I do? I couldn't tell the difference between Obama's healthcare plan and Hillary's healthcare plan. So who did I go to first? I went to Obama. And where did I go? My favorite place to go to find out everything, YouTube. So what did I do? I played a clip from a rally down in Oregon. A big rally I don't know exactly what was going on there, because YouTube just, you hit play and then it goes. So here he is in this stadium, there's people everywhere and they're chanting Obama, Obama. And so people ask questions out of the audience and they say, okay, Obama, What's the difference between your healthcare plan and Hillary's healthcare plan? And I was just like, I was strapped. I was like, sweet. I'm like, finally I'm going to get someone to explain it, and then I'll be able to explain it to all of you guys here today. So he starts off. He says, I believe fundamentally that everyone should have health care. And so my plan is to provide health care for all the people that don't have it. And he went on for about 60 seconds on some of the details of the plan. And then his voices started going up, and he started going, and I believe that America can have change. I believe that we need a candidate who's willing to have hope. We need to have hope for you and for your families and for everyone. And everyone just erupted. And I was like, okay. I stopped the video and I was like, I don't know what the difference between Hillary's health care plan and Barack Obama's health care plan. That's the problem. His speech was fabulous. In fact, I felt like stirring inside of me, like, this candidate is going to change the world. But then I was like, well, that's cool and all, but I need some more specifics. So really, my first point here is let's talk about, plain and simply, let's not belittle the voters. Like, that's what we're here today. I'm not here to belittle you, to say you can't understand the numbers. You can. You can understand. And that's why my partners kind of got into some details. They were like, hey, what are some of the specifics of policy? Why? Because you guys aren't dumb. At least I hope not. I don't think you guys are. I really do think if you guys came willing to hear a debate about politics, it really is interesting to you. Like, what plans do we have that can change the U.S.? So these are questions that we need to answer. So first of all, we fundamentally on the opposition side say that numbers do matter, plan specifics matter. The reason a company like Dell is as successful as they are, because they project the numbers. They have large meetings and they get together, telecommunicate each other, and they say, hey, okay, how much are we making from this Boeing account, you know, and how much can we make? What are our losses? What's acceptable? What divisions do we have to cut? If our candidates can't answer the basic questions that every single corporation in America does, I don't know. Maybe we'll just continue to pile on the $9 trillion in debt that we currently have because people just spend like crazy. See, this is not the kind of solution that we have. And that's not the kind of candidate we're going to vote for. So we think we should have an American candidate instead of an Irish-American candidate. Go ahead, Stephen.
What are the differences between their two healthcare policies? And if you don't know, would that not show us that the average American isn't going to take that into account? They're going to take into account who's going to inspire them more, and that's why the Democrats should pick Barack Obama.
So that's the thing. And I think what the Democrat Party should stand for is not belittling the voters. We should stand for actual policies that matter. Now let me get into healthcare, the other half of your question. Okay, first of all, one, healthcare, these plans actually matter. What are the differences? I'll explain it to you. First of all, Obama's healthcare plan is, he says, okay, people fundamentally do want healthcare, and we believe that on the opposition team. People do want healthcare. So let's provide incentives for people with insurance that don't have insurance to be able to get insurance. Perfect. Okay. Well, what's Hillary's plan? How does it differ? Well, she says fundamentally the reason why our healthcare system is messed up is not because people aren't getting insurance. She said is because people aren't getting insurance. And the problem is that we aren't together collectively working on this. Rather, we have tiers of the rich with healthcare insurance and the poor with healthcare insurance in different levels. So she compares it to what we have with our military hospitals. And so let's take a move towards a step like that. So she's really actually stepping out and saying, let's change our healthcare system to a more socialized healthcare system. Let's get everyone on it, and then we can all benefit, because we all can't afford healthcare on our own. Like, if I had to have a heart transplant, I couldn't afford it. But together, the chances of me having a heart transplant with all of us here, if we all put a little bit of our money in, we can all be there when the upset happens, when this random chance happens, when your kidney fails or heart goes out. So let me move on. The issue of gender. I think this is actually a really big issue. I think we can't overlook gender. I think that's something that we need to embrace, and that's why my partner Shelley got up and gave an excellent speech on why gender matters. First of all, they swept basically the issue of gender under the aisle, the Irish aisle. Secondly, like, they stated that in the time she was in the White House, and there's great first ladies of the White House, tons of them. Eleanor Roosevelt, fabulous work. But what do we have? They said, well, her only experience in the White House was taking receptions. I mean, that is just the characterization right there. This mindset must be changed, and that's why we would vote for Hillary. The exact mindset we see out of the Irish team is exactly why we should vote for Hillary. Okay, moving on. No. It's too good. I've got to keep going. Okay, so what can I compare it to? Well, I think what we saw is Argentina had the first woman elected, right? The first woman president elected in Argentina last fall. And what her husband had great economic change. They defaulted on $80 billion in debt in Argentina. If you remember the crisis when their dollar just, when their currency just dropped, her husband helped bring it out of it. Nestor, Kirchner. Hey, you guys are great. Nestor Kirchner, thanks for helping me on this speech. I appreciate it. So you guys are good sports. Okay, so, and he helped bring it out of the. He helped bring it out with his economic plans of trying to stimulate the economy, trying to get credit, and trying to socialize your system, and as well as working with her neighbors such as Venezuela. She got elected on this, and what do we see? Is that they're poised with record and 6-year growth margins of 8%. This country saw the same situation we're in, and my partner brought up Clinton. Rainbow. Hillary, she's going to be the pot of gold. I mean, you really have to take the same step that Argentina took, and that's something that we support in the opposition team. Secondly, thirdly, my final point is the U.S. reputation. One, we're in a cultural struggle. Like, if you look at women overseas, like such as in the Middle East, they don't have the same rights that women share here. And we think voting for Hillary is one step to say, hey, not only do we give women the rights in this country, we're also saying they are capable leaders, and we agree with that on the opposition team. And we're willing to say, no, a country like Iran that does not allow the women to drive, we're willing to take 8 or 10 or 12, 15 steps higher than that. We're willing to make them the leader of the free world. I think that that's an excellent precedent. I think that's a reason why we should vote. And it's an excellent reason. Finally, moving on foreign policy. Bush's shoot first, ask questions later. This Bush's Texan foreign policy. It's the Texas foreign policy. Supersize it. You know, let's send in the military as big as we can. We think this is a bad way to do foreign policy. Alienating some of our enemies, bad way to do foreign policy. What do we see on the other end, the other extreme of that? Well, let's just run our envoys into everyone. So Obama's going to meet with President Ahmadinejad. This is that same shoot first, ask questions later. It's just from the other perspective. We think that Hillary both shows her wisdom and experience through but she's willing to take precautions that my partners have brought up. So what do we see here today? We see that you need to take a look. What candidate do you really want to vote for this fall? What steps do you want to take towards that? Towards representing what we believe as Americans? We believe that if you have a candidate with 7 years of U.S. congressional, being a U.S. senator versus a paltry 2 years, and then you have the people supporting Obama saying he's much more qualified, what do you see? You see that someone's trying to put the wool over your eyes, and you need to take a stand for what America stands for, and take a stand, vote for Hillary. Why? Because gender is an issue that matters, and because our reputation is on the line.
Thank you, Nigel, for concluding our debate. This closes out the debate. Thank you, both sides, government and opposition. You guys can cross the floor and shake hands.
This is actually the second debate that we've done today. We had a debate at Microsoft campus earlier on, and tonight at 6 on the Northwest College campus, we're going to conclude a final debate before they leave for tomorrow. But right now, what we want to do is vote. And so, I want you to vote for who you think did the best job. We're going to vote by applause. And applause volume. Okay, so if you think that the Northwest College or university team won, please applaud. If you think the Irish won, please applaud. That's me pretty close, but we'll give it to the Irish team.
Perfect. Thank you.
And
I think some people voted twice, which might be a problem if it happens in the election.
unless that happens in Florida, in which case.
Right, Janice Perry, our communications director here in the city, does have some gifts that she wants to give to the debaters. She said, take home and remember Kirkland. And so we thank you all for listening and watching this debate. And hopefully we'll do some more in the future. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.